Okay. So I'm not sure. I'm on the planning committee, and I'm not sure I got the memo of what my talk was supposed to be on. So, just to let you know, I will hobble around. You probably will see me hobble around. This was not a cow accident. My hand was a cow accident from AI and cows. So, I want to take time to first tell you I'm not a reproduction physiologist. So we're looking at this from a totally different aspect. We're taking it from, I'm an extension bee specialist. I get these calls. What do I tell producers and how can they be implemented? Now, I picked my topic, send in the title, and then Dr. John Hall calls me and goes, I'm going to talk about the profitability. So I won't have a lot of the economics in it. He's going to be talking about the economics. I'm going to be talking about what happens based on reproductive technology, and then he'll put the numbers to it. So tonight at the bullpen session, John and I'll see if we can agree. Okay, so the first thing we need to think about is this is a graph of the growing population. So why do we care? We need to feed the world, and I'd love to have and to continue to have beef on my plate. And as I'm certain everyone in this room would like to be able to continue to produce beef. So we just don't have a growing population. We also have people in countries that don't have protein. So as we look at that, we have an increase in beef production needed. So currently we're at about 22% of the world's beef, and we need to double that by 2050. So how are we going to do that? That's the question I get from economists or consumers. How are you going to make beef cheap on my plate? And I said, well, beef shouldn't be cheap on your plate, but they don't like that comment. So how are we going to do that? So we know we have had dwindling cattle numbers, right? However, we're still continuing to increase the amount of beef produced. And so as we think about that, one of those technologies we've used is reproductive technologies to make that happen. Oh, I should have looked. So that says why reproductive technologies aren't used, just to, since the slide is cut off. So I just want to take this slide to point out a few things. The four technologies we kind of think about is ester synchronization, AIing, pregnancy diagnosis, and then semen quality. So the two I'm going to basically be talking about today is ester synchronization and AI. I feel like when I teach 137, I feel like the noise behind me is my class talking while I'm trying to talk. As we look at that yellow bar, that tells me that the number one reason producer says is too much labor or time. And I tell you, this year, you certainly have been challenged with that probably even more than most years, right? This has been a horrible year for production and getting everything done. But what I want to do is start thinking about the things that potentially you can control. And the next one on that is cost. So this is the average cow cost per service. So what I did here was take the price for semen compared to the differences in price that we pay per bull, and we estimated the cost of the price per service by bulls, assuming they serve 30 cows a year and they get to hang around in the herd for 4 years. So with that, these are the prices we came up with. Yeah, I'm old and I can't read anymore. So we started at 17 to about 25. That's about a 28% increase in semen prices. And the price in the yellow bar is the bulls prices that I used. And I got those. Those are Angus bulls. That was only was about a 38% increase in price per service. That does not include any of the costs of maintaining it. So I look at this as you can tell me whatever you want for costs. Here's the reality is I have fudge room so that you can use some technology on your operation. It will still be the same cost as your bulls. So this is the Estrus synchronization and AI protocols. We are not going to talk about those. All of them work if they're done properly on their operation. We can visit about those tonight. And typically, we can use them with natural service or AI, depending on what fits your operation. So what I want to talk about is the end product of these. So the biggest question I get is the producer will say, well, I want to do some AI-ing, and I can't AI, so I have to fix timed AI, and I want to do 200 cows, and I'm going to have 200 calves on the same day. No, just hold on. Schaefer did a research project at Missouri. The dark line is the day the calves should the cows should calve. You should expect about 16 to 20% at maximum on a given day from a fixed time AI. So you don't have to panic. So this is a project done by Dave Patterson, and he's done it. It's an accumulation over 11 years. I can put up tons and tons of research that shows the solid black line, the one furthest to your left, is fixed-time AI. The one with the little squares is estrus detection in AI. Everyone loves to sit and watch cows. And then the dashed line is natural. We all know through reproductive technology we can move or change the calving distribution to having older calves. So why do we care? It's money in my pocket, hopefully. But I didn't want to just take a one-year snapshot, because a lot of times I can have research. If I do it 1 year, the next year it doesn't change. It doesn't come out the same. So I wanted to take something that was an accumulation over multiple years to show you how important that it is, a continuous response. So the next thing I want to talk about is a project that Cliff Lamb did at the University of Florida. And this was when he moved down to Florida, and when he first got there, they turned the bulls out, went and found the bulls in 120 days. And so what he wanted to do was tighten up that calving season, potentially incorporate AI. And so as you look at that, the first year, first couple years, the bulls had free rein, and then he started AI in heifers and cows early, and then bringing up the late calvers. And ultimately, when we get down to the end, it took him about when we get down to the end, he's just AI-ing heifers earlier than cows and shortened the breeding season by 50 days. Well, I can say 50 days right now is a lot less time and labor for you to go check cows. It's a huge investment in time to have a long calving season. So as we look at that, the green and red lines to your right, those that are further to the left are later years, and you can see that he has changed the date of his calving. So what are those dates? I can't read them from there, so I put them in a figure for you. You can see that his calving percentage, or his pregnancy rates, went up from about 8 in the 80s to in the 90s. So he improved his calving preg rates by 10%. The mean calving date was dropped by about 40 days, which is huge in my mind because a calf grows every day. And he is checking those cows 50 less days a year. So as we look at that, we get down. I'm a money's person. It's really hard not to include some money in it. Sorry, John. By increasing the value of those calves, he increased that by about $170 per calf. Most people would be extremely happy with an extra $150 in their pocket. And for their whole herd, it was a $50,000 improvement. So as you look at that, that's a tremendous opportunity. He didn't do it over 1 year. He didn't go there and say, we're just going to go to a 70-day. We're just going to get rid of all those cows at the end. He made it a gradual process. And so sometimes I think we go home, we say we need to do it immediately, but we need to do it in a stepwise process. So the other thing is a lot of people do not want to do artificial insemination. So this is just a simple example. It was done by Dr. Perry, part of a bigger project that looked at natural service versus synchronization with natural service. And so what he did within this result, you can see by day 14, there was more of those cows that were synchronized with the seeder. More of those were pregnant by day 14. Quote, I get older calves. The calving, the breeding season pregnancy rates was the same between both of those groups. So it's not like if you go to synchronization, you have to take all or none. There are opportunities to just do one procedure within reproductive technology. So to go to some, this is some work done at North Dakota. And so this is just a fixed-timed AI with natural service. And you can see in the first 21 days, they got about 15% more cows pregnant in the first 21 days. And then because they had the same breeding season, those natural service ones got caught up in the second 21 days. So as you're looking at that, I look at it as every day a calf's born, I'm getting more pounds on that calf. So they have followed that through to weaning weights. And you can notice that the second and third has no differences. But when we look at the first calving season, there is about 15% more calves pregnant in that first 21 days. And we got about 20 pounds more calf for those AIs versus natural service. So a lot of times we talk with artificial insemination, selecting genetically superior sires. Don't throw any rotten tomatoes at me. I know those bulls had to be produced at some place. So I know they're being produced by seed stock producers. So, but a lot of times we all can't have every one of them. So as you think about that, it allows us to tap into bulls that we might not be able to otherwise afford. So this is some research by Lamb, and when he broke it down into 10-day increments, you can see with a fixed-timed AI, he was able to get more of those cows pregnant and more calves born in the first 10 days. So we're even moving them further, not just 21 days, but actually 10 days earlier. And again, you can see that those natural service cows caught up in that second cycle. So some work at Mark, they looked at cows, about over 3,000 calves, to look at how much you're gaining per day for that. So you're looking at about 2.4 pounds a day per day of age. So if I have a cow that's calved one cycle earlier or 21 days, that gives me 50 pounds. So you might say, well, that's going to cost me. Well, I'd ask you to seriously think, how many of you sort your cows by when they calve, if they calve in the first cycle, second cycle, or third cycle, and feed them differently over the winter time? Probably most of us don't. Now, I know they do that in sheep, don't get me wrong. But the reality is we don't do that, so there's probably no additional winter feed costs for those cows if they calve in the first cycle or second or third cycle. And so as we look at those, I'm just getting pounds, extra pounds, but it shouldn't bring an extremely additional cost to them. So one of the reasons I was asked to do this talk is because I was weird enough or lucky enough, I'm not sure which, to get a big USDA grant. And so Dr. George Perry, who is a reproductive physiologist, we submitted the grant, and we understand that not every producer will adapt the same technology. So what we wanted to do, and we're in the process of doing this grant, is look at different levels and see what kind of production. So we went out to 10 herds, and these herds have facilities that are challenging, to say the least. One broken hand will prove that. And then to the point where they have facilities better than the universities. So there was a wide variety of the operations we worked with, and a producer either started at level one or level two, and then they stepped to the next one. So level one, we split their herd in half, and half was non-synchronized with natural service, and the other half was synchronized with and bred by natural service. If they started on level two, everything was synchronized, half was AI'd, half was natural service. And because we think there might be potential value, this grant was targeted at small and medium-sized producers. So you may say, well, I'm not that. But a lot of beginner producers are small, and they're growing, and so they need technologies to help them gather income or revenue faster so that they can expand. So we looked at synchronizing with AI conventional semen versus synchronizing and AIing with gender-sorted semen. So we're just going to go through what we've learned. So with the AI, synced and non-sync, we saw no differences between any of those times. Let a nutritionist do something, they'll screw it up every time. So I was very disappointed and said, there is no difference. Why does it matter? Well, when we looked and started splitting the 10 days, we saw that within the first 10 days, even though there was no statistical difference between the first 21, we got more bread in the first 10 days with the synchronized. So I only have 10 days instead of 21 days. That's still 25 pounds in my cowboy math. So as I look at that, there's still potential for that. So as we also looked at natural service with synchronized versus synchronized with AI, we saw that those natural service cows actually out-conceived, this is actually the calves that were born on the ground, so it wasn't just pregrades. So we saw slight differences. So as Dr. Perry says, I can screw up anything. I'm a nutritionist. So as we think about that, if I came knocking on your door and said, can I bother you for the next 3 years? All of my producers had a breeding season of 45 to 60 days. A lot of them had very good systems. They were pretty progressive in what they were, because otherwise they're not going to go, oh, you can bother me for 3 years. You can take a subgroup of my calves. So they had something worthwhile that they're willing to engage in that. And so we followed through. We saw no differences in weaning weights at level one or level two. This should say level one and level two. When you look at your slides, you can catch them when you're on stage. We did see a slight difference. The male calves weighed more than the females. Oh, that's shocking information. And as we looked at average daily gain, there was a tendency for those AI calves to have slightly better average daily gain. And again, the males gained faster than the females. So as I said, we wanted to look at gender-sorted semen. So we had to work with a company to get it. We used the same five bulls at all the operations. So you either had half of your cows would have conventional bull A, gender-sorted bull A. So it's not like a bull difference between these. And what we wanted to do is we figured that if you had a small herd, if we got you more male calves, then you could potentially have a bigger lot that were older that potentially would bring you more money at the sale barn. That was our goal of this. So as you look at this, we found similar results to just about everyone else. We saw higher conception rates with the conventional. However, we were happy with the gender sorted because with fixed time to AI, we expect 50 to 60% of them to conceive to being AI'd. So we were pretty happy. But the gender sorted was about 78% of the conventional, which is probably in the par where we expected. So we wanted to see what those differences were. And so we had estrus synchronization patches on them. So those that were activated or partially activated, saying they were in estrus, so they were in heat, had much better conception rates than those that were not showing estrus. Hint, if you're going to use gender-sorted semen, you want to use it on the cows that are showing estrus. Okay, we couldn't distinguish that because we went every other cow in the as they came through. So as we look at those, when we look at those individually, again, for those that were in estrus, we saw better compared to those in non-estrus, really driving home the point that those needed to be be in estrus, and it's critical for that if we're going to use and invest in more expensive gender-sorted semen. And so as we looked at the calving, so the calf spawn, we have those calves on the ground. Actually, some of them have been finished in the feedlot. We saw no differences in the first 10 days, but we got relatively high conception rates. We were happy. We did see that the conventional semen had higher calves born, and again, in that second cycle, then our gender sorted caught up, or those were bred by the bull. So, right, we saw no differences in breeding season long. So those are some potentials. Well, the bottom line is we implement these. We tell you to do it, and then what happens to those calves? So we follow those calves through into the feedlot and to see how they performed. So here, I'm just going to set this up. This is pounds we're measuring. It's beginning weight that they went into the feedlot, final weight when they were ready to harvest, and hot carcass weight. We determine when they would go to slaughter based on visual appraisal, ballparking that they had about a half inch of back fat. And so as you can see, when we looked at final weights, AIs were heavier than natural service, and they tended to be higher than the non-synchronized calves. And that followed through to hot carcass weight. We also looked at those that were early versus late. So those born in the first cycle, anything late was 22 days born on day 22 or later. And so those coming into the feedlot weighed heavier for those earliers. However, there is no statistical difference when we got to the finishing phase, so those late calves were able to send. Now, think about the calves that they sent me. They weren't going to send me their duds because they wanted to have opportunity to brag to the rest of the producers. And then when we went to hot carcass weight, there tended to be those young, those earlier or older calves were heavier in the hot carcass weight. So to look at some of those numbers, the day of age, as expected, those early calves were different. We already talked about the hot carcass weight, but I'm not really good at reading graphs, so I thought you might want to see them. Because this information isn't in your proceedings. I got it done at 1 o'clock on Monday morning. And then the only difference, we saw no differences in ribeye, marbling, or back fat among the treatments. Remember, we were selecting to hopefully get them about a half inch back fat. However, those that were born earlier had a greater back fat than those of the late, and we saw a heavier or a larger yield grade for those earlier calves versus those for the late. Now, think about a 2.9 versus a 2.7. That's still a yield grade too within the meat industry. So, Rick Funkson, I think I saw him here someplace today already, he also did a project, and he had his stuff together much sooner than we did, and he used Red Angus and Semitol. He had 770. He looked at first, second, and third calving when they were born, and he also marketed them to the harvest plant at about a half-inch back fat. So I want to commend him. He did a much better job. He had about double the animals we had, and it has birth weight, weaning weight, final weight, hot carcass weight, and marbling. And as you go across, all those in the first calving cycle weighed more at all of those times. The second one weighed less, and the third one weighed less yet. So his showed a dramatic linear decrease as those calves got younger. And he also saw that with marbling, he had more marbling effect. So what did that mean for them? It meant that those in the first 21 days yield $74 more for them as they sold them. So that's always interesting, but the reality is we have another half, right? Typically, if we don't do any gender selection, we should expect about 50% female, 50% male. So what's going to happen with those females? And so this is more from a practical sense that those females, I want, we didn't follow them through into the performance. What I did was took Cushman's work, and these are for heifers that when they calved as a two-year-old, they calved in the first 21 days. So when I think about this, if you're going to use some technology to ensure that those calves or heifers in this case are going to perform, you might want to do that with your heifers based on this research. So those that calved in the first 21 days, for their first six calves, weaned more pounds of calves than those that calved in the second or third, their first time out. So even though they may have slipped further back in the herd, they still produced you more pounds without any additional cost other than that original investment to get them calving early the first time, which I think is kind of a one-shot deal. The other thing is we can see that those heifers that calved as two-year-olds in the first 21 days were longer in their herd. So that potentially would reduce your replacement rate, hopefully maybe allow you to market more calves, some of those kind of things, or expand your herd if that's the stage you're at. So some technology that can help you, allow you to make some decisions based on what the economy is doing at that time or market prices. So with that, just to summarize all that garbage I just told you, and hopefully you can take some of it home and implement. Estrus synchronization can be used with natural or AI. Either one will work and should move up your calving date. AI along with genetic superior sires allowed for more quality of product and probably quantity of product, depending on what research you're looking at. Gender sorted semen, we highly recommend you use that on cows that are expressing estrus if you want the optimal conception rates from that. Early born calves will increase their feedlot performance and their carcass quality or hot carcass weight when they get to that. And doing some increased management for those heifers so that they're calving in that first 21 days will potentially increase longevity as well as the pounds of calves weaned for them throughout their first six calving cycles. So with that, I want to thank you, and I'll be at the bullpen session to answer questions.
Questions now?
Tonight.
Tonight?